Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another broadcast of Keeping It Real with Frankie D from the John Nevada Broadcast Center on the Windy City Hometown Entertainment Network and Jack FM 89.7 WRHS FM Norwich. Today's subject will be about the Italian culture. And now, here is Frankie D.
Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant.
But he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. He's got high apple pie in the sky.
High hopes. So anytime you're getting low, instead of letting go, just remember that ant.
Oops, welcome to another edition of Keeping It Real with Frankie D. Today's subject will be Italian-American history in Chicago. I feel it's a very important subject, and I'm happy that our show can do a show like this, and we can do a show like this and document this history, because it needs to be documented. I have two very good guests on the show today. The first is a frequent guest of our show, Mr. Bill Dalcero, the president of the Italic Institute of America. And my other guest is Vic Giustino, the professor, we call him. He has done radio. He has done many, many walking tours of Chicago. And he actually taught an Italian-American history class at Wright College. So welcome to the show, gentlemen, and
Thank you. Let's get started. Welcome.
I'm going to get started with the professor. Let's start from the beginning, please.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure.
This is a very important subject. Okay, let's get into one of the early people, Italians in Illinois, Henry Di Tonti, T-O-N-T-I or T-O-N-T-Y. In fact, his name's on the Michigan Avenue Bridge with LaSalle.
He came still there on the Michigan Avenue Bridge?
Yeah, I double-checked.
What years are we talking that he came?
We're talking, he came here basically, you want to say, 1680 to 1700.
Wow, okay.
And he's the one that kind of ran the fort at Starved Rock when they built the fort. I call him the acting governor of the Illinois Territory for the French. Now, you got to remember, Illinois didn't become a state till 1818, and we have Mr. Tonti here in the 1680s.
Yes.
Wow, okay, so he was there considerably, 100 years
and
before.
And he's called Iron Hand.
Iron Hand, okay.
And he...
Not Iron Man.
Iron Hand,
okay.
And he had lost his... He had been in the French service, that's why LaSalle, and he lost his hand in action, had an iron fist, and the Indians had never seen anything like this, prosthesis.
Oh, I see. Okay, but he was Italian.
Yeah.
He was Italian.
In the French service.
Born in Gaeta, Italy, which is close to Rome.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Gaeta is also where John Cabot was born, whose real name was Giovanni Caboto.
So all these
great explorers came from that region of Italy and worked for other governments.
Now,
and Tonti was one of them.
As far as the name change, if you know, why more or less did they change these names? Do you have an answer for that?
Well, you mean later on or way back?
Well, I mean, modern day, we know
John
Cabot.
Oh, modern name, that's, I think it's anglicized.
Yeah, just Americanized.
Yeah, sure,
assimilated.
There's, I remember seeing a letter from Italian professor in 1928 to one of the newspapers. He said, hey, what are you trying to do? You're trying to make Tonti French. He's an Italian in the French service, so that's going back to 1928.
Wow.
So sometimes political things are involved.
It's unfortunate because I think today's generation, the last generation, we think John Cabot, we don't think Italian.
I'll give you another example, because this is a subject dear to my heart, not to plug my book, but I'm doing it a little bit.
Absolutely, go ahead.
I just finished a book called Bebop, Swing, and Bella Musica, The History of Italian Americans in Jazz. One of the greatest jazz musicians in America was Louis Belson, who was born in Rock Falls, Illinois, near Moline, the Davenport border.
Okay.
His real name was Luigi Balassoni.
Wow.
But there you go. The name was Americanized. Most people don't think he's Italian-American.
It's unfortunate, yes. They
so
would
nobody
never
gives
know.
Us credit for a lot of things.
Unless we do shows like this.
Yeah, exactly.
They will
exactly.
not know. So thank you both. Okay.
And a little bit more about Tanti before we move on. He was Lassalle was killed. He considered Tanti one of his best friends. Tanti was here many years. He ended up under Quebec, you know. And they went down the Mississippi River and claimed all the land for France. So Louisiana was named by Tanti and Lassalle for King Louis IV.
Wow.
And there's also, correct me, Professor, if I'm wrong, I believe there's a statue of him in Arkansas, because he also got down to Arkansas, too?
Yes, he did, and he died in Mobile. In fact, I said that...
Mobile, Alabama.
Yeah, wow. 1704. And I said that to some people one day from Arkansas. He said, we have a town, Tantiville.
Correct.
Wow.
Correct, there's a whole town named after him.
And in Chicago, where is this plaque with his name?
It's on the Michigan Avenue Bridge by the Tribune Tower.
By the Tribune Towers.
Yeah.
So all our listeners could go to the Michigan Avenue Bridge, look up his name, look up to the sky and say, thank you, Frankie D., for sending us here with this knowledge.
Or Enrico T.
Enrico
T., there you go.
By the way, I think there's a plaque for him in Starved Rock National Park, too.
Oh,
is
sure.
Yeah.
With the fort there. And,
so you can go down.
We have a street in Chicago named for him, too.
We do.
Yes,
on the northwest side. It's only 2 blocks long.
Right off of Tui and, I believe, Devon. But it's spelled T-O-N-T-Y, again, where people think, oh, he's French.
Oh.
His actual name was Enrico.
Okay.
His last name was spelled T-O-N-T-I.
Which would be Tonti.
And researching an old book, went through that, given some of the lands for the service and everything, that he sold off 500 acres of land in the Illinois Territory, true Quebec, in about 1695. So considered kind of the first land transaction.
That's that interesting? That is fascinating.
And also, too, you hear these stories that Christopher Columbus is currently the bad boy among academics. It's debatable. We're not going to talk about that here. But Tomty, when you read about him, again, Professor, back me up on this, he was one of the few Europeans who treated the Native Americans with total respect.
And he spoke a couple
Indian languages.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. What a statesman.
He made treaties. He didn't break treaties with them.
That's great. Okay.
So there's a role model that our kids should know about.
Everybody,
regardless.
Everybody should, and I venture to say that.
So that's actually what DuSable comes 1790, so 100 years
before.
We have Mr. Tanti, and
yep.
They camped at the Chicago area many, many times, going and up and down.
Wow.
Very true. There should be some kind of bigger honor for him.
Definitely should.
We can do it for Jane Byrne. We should do it for Enrico Tanti.
I agree 100%. Maybe this show will catapult it.
There you
Let's
go.
Let's hope. Okay, so beyond Tanti, which could be the movie, okay? Where are we at? When does waves come in?
Well, I think, you get an argument about this. Where did the Italians start? We're kind of here, of course, two Italians signed Constitution. You know, we got to remember that. One Italian name, one a hidden Italian name. And Mr. Mazzei, Jefferson, loved him and used his philosophy on equality.
They were neighbors in Virginia.
Yeah. Filippo Mazzei, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I think going back to...
And the other Italian that signed, was that William...
Paca?
Yeah.
And then Caesar Rodney was the other one.
Yeah,
Caesar Rodney.
Yeah. From Delaware. That's why I went to Delaware.
I never heard of him.
I got the picture of his statue.
So three Italians signed the Declaration.
Just the two.
Two.
Oh.
But one you wouldn't know the name was Italian.
Wow. Okay. I never heard that name before in my life. Okay. Thank you.
So now getting to Chicago.
Yeah,
we're
in Chicago.
We're in the 1850s. They're getting a little colony. Not many. They're just coming here. And more growth starts, and in the 1880s, you have a group of Italians living around Grand and Wells. Now, people say today even you had Sbarbaro Funeral Parlor there and many of things. And many of the Italians that were in George Dunn's organization, they would come from Wall Street. So you have, they built the church, Assumption Church, 1885. That's 10 years before the Pompeii Church.
And it's still there today?
It's one of the oldest, and I think one of the biggest benefactors was the Cuneo family, or Cuneo, C-U-N-E-O. They came over in the 1850s, hit it big in real estate. They became one of the first families of Chicago. Italian. They blended in very quickly. Right. But they became very wealthy, became part of the elite of the Gold Coast. You'll see some monuments to them in their buildings, their name.
Wow.
They put up a lot of the money for that Assumption Church.
The Assumption Church, which is still standing and being used.
Danny Farina, when he died, the funeral was out of there.
Was it really?
And you could see that. So Illinois Street, down the street was a school, Mother Cabrini tied up with the school over there when they had the school. Now you're at, just think of this. So let's say Grand and Wells.
Okay.
So now the Italians use Grand Avenue and get to Grand and Ogden. So there's a big Italian neighborhood. Then they're jumping a little further west, and they're going to Grand and Western. Then Grand and Central Park.
Oh, so Plesky.
They're moving.
It kept going west.
On Grand Avenue and made it to the burbs.
Oh, I see. Okay, but as you're talking about, as decades go by. Okay, I see. All right, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Gradual.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, gradual.
And part of this is based on public transportation, following because a lot of people didn't have cars, so you take the streetcar or the old horse car,
and
whatever.
Buggy, right.
Right, right. So as family members came, they go to see their family, so neighborhoods get bigger and bigger and bigger.
And then you get to, once you get past Harlem Avenue, you made it in the suburbs, Elmwood Park, Franklin Park, River Park, Reverend
Eve. At a much later date.
Yeah, sure.
One of the oldest, this is my old neighborhood back in Grand and Ogden, Grand and Damon. One of the oldest businesses in Chicago was run by Italians, the Gonella Bakery Factory.
Yeah.
1885 or 86, I believe, Professor?
Yeah. On Erie Street, if I'm not
mistaken? Yes, but they've since moved. But they were on Erie for over 100 years.
Wow.
And one of their ancestors was recently the mayor of Elmhurst.
That is true.
Most suburban of Chicago suburbs.
Yes, Marcucci.
Marcucci, right.
Yes.
He's part of that family.
Yes, interesting note. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, what about the other neighborhoods? I mean,
well, that's, you know, a different neighborhood. So then, when you're talking neighborhoods, why are people in the neighborhoods? Why did they come to Grand and Wells? You had one Randolph Street Market there. You had the Fulton Market. You had industry over there. So people come. And the candy factories that were located in that neighborhood.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. Curtis Candy was there. And in fact, my mother, 1931, I guess they went on strike to get another 25 cents an hour.
Wow.
Minimum wage back then.
Yeah, and kind of the company or somebody brought in some strike breakers, so Mama got a little hit on the head with a 2x4.
Oh, my gosh. And Brox as well?
Sure, Brox. Yeah. And when we get into companies, the classic one was Salerno Cookies.
Anybody
remember where they were originally located at?
I don't.
I do not, no.
4600 on Division Street before they moved to Niles.
4600 West Division.
The building is still there.
And don't forget the Hart Schaffner Marx Company, too. A lot of Italians were employed as tailors and seamstresses.
Sure.
Now, how were Italians treated from the rest of the population?
Well, the Cuneos were treated very well because they had a lot of money and they blended in. But, Professor, you can tell us about the others.
How were the masses treated?
Well, there's, you know, you hear stories about why would they build their own church, and when fellow said one day, well, he said, other churches, some of them wanted us to be in the basement.
Which happened a lot, yeah.
So we were pretty much second-class, third-class, and fourth-class citizens.
Yeah, that's happened, and you see the things. When Rudolph Valentino was here in the 1920s doing some of the shows, one of the newspapers kind of called him effeminate with the stuff that goes down today.
Back then they said that?
Yeah.
He was a sissy. Whatever that meant.
Well, what it meant is all the ladies were falling in love with him, and they were trying
jealous.
To discredit him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
he was the first big movie star, by the way.
So Rodolfo Valentino is an actual person.
Yeah.
Came from Italy.
Yep.
And
went
was
to
his
Hollywood.
Profession? He was an actor.
Yeah, sure.
But he's forever known as like the heartthrob.
Yeah.
He set the mold.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because you would almost think.
And he was a dapper dresser.
Sure.
Very dapper.
Sure, and you would almost think that it was almost a made-up figure. You know?
He was real.
He was real. He was real. Right, right. What were we going to say, Bill?
Well, I was going to say he was a dandy, to use the word of the time, right?
Yeah.
That was the word they used.
you talk about it, and you read the different comments, you know, about this. And here's another story, and you're into a lot of the you know, the jazz, we get into Louisiana,
Nick LaRocca.
Doing the record in 1912.
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans jazz.
And speaking of Chicago, if you bring it up jazz, Joe Marsala was one of the first people to integrate jazz music, 1936, before Benny Goodman, who was another Chicagoan, by the way.
Okay.
So nobody knows that. That word has to get out.
Wow.
And the Club de Lis on the south side, owned by the Italian family, Nat King Cole got starts that many of the black entertainers.
Is that
In fact, there's a book on it, and a gentleman died a couple of years ago. He was very big on black. Well,
now, is Nat King Cole from Chicago? Because I'm not familiar.
Sure.
He is from Chicago as well.
But Club de Lis on 55th and State had a lot of black entertainers in there. And this gentleman said to me, he said, your people gave my people a big chance in entertainment.
That's great that he acknowledged that.
That's great.
Okay, if we could just change subjects a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about Taylor Street, the famous Taylor Street area and the Italian section and the demise of it, if you will.
Well, there was the big fight on, you know, Florence Scala and the University of Illinois. You know, there were those that didn't want it there. You
it was
know.
The 1960s, I believe.
So backing up the 40s, the 30s,
oh,
the
you
50s.
Wanted, you wanted
well, I mean, this is a huge Italian neighborhood,
oh, sure,
correct?
Sure.
Huge.
Sure.
Okay.
A lot of people went through there, yeah.
Yeah. Jane Addams, Hull House, the Lessons, the things over there, sure. They're there, and you're for sure. Probably starting in the 1890s, the small population originally. You had the French and the Irish at the church over. By the 1920s, very, very heavy Italian.
Okay. And then what changes things? What is the famous?
Probably economics, I would guess, right?
What you mean?
They were moved.
Well, I was getting at what you were alluding to earlier about.
Well, the university buying up all the land.
It was the 50s and 60s,
Yeah, displaced a lot of people.
So they bought up miles and miles and miles of land.
Now, there's a pro and con on it. Florence Scala fought it. She said, we're being displaced. And
so was this basically like a like the city doing an eminent domain where they
very much so.
You have to leave your house. You have to sell your house to us. This is the fair market value. Now get out.
Yep.
And there were those that said, let's put it further south. More rundown, more industrial, you know, which today, if you let's put it 18th Street, Halsted. There's a lot of bust down, the whole Maxwell Street.
A lot of space. There was a lot
Maxwell
of space.
Maxwell Street is falling apart.
Professor, do you know what the rationale from the city's point of view was to pick that particular area as opposed to what you just said, which I would think would make more sense to take more of a dilapidated area? What was the city, what were they saying? Why did they want this?
Some said it might be some politics involved.
I've heard that too, maybe political theories, and Mayor Daley was worried about the voting power of the Italian neighborhoods. It was getting so big, and this was a way to break it up. Hasn't been proven, but a lot of people think there was some political considerations.
People have said that. I've heard people say that. Too.
Yeah.
You know.
So politically speaking, was it also possibly maybe another angle just kind of breaking up our neighborhoods and our...
Well, and then you had, you know, there are people that are moving to the burbs.
Yeah, assimilation,
And I think when you talk this, is a big factor on it, too, is if you think before World War II and, you know, let's use Grand Avenue as Italian, Chicago Avenue is Polish, Division Street is Polish, Lincoln Avenue is German. Once World War II came and the guys are in the foxhole together, things changed.
Yes.
And we became American. And the other thing that changed it is these Italian kids were starting to go to college under the GI Bill, and were able to buy a house brand new out in Glen Allen for $18,500 with $600 down.
Yeah.
So, Mama, I'm
and
going
a lot of land.
Sure.
Yep, much more.
For the first
space.
Time and, in their lives.
And brand new.
Yes. That's a very interesting
that happened,
point.
That happened, too, interestingly, in Highwood, Illinois, which is about 25 miles north on the North Shore, just near Highland Park.
Right, near Highland Park.
A lot of Italians lived up there, too. And it's the same thing, though, very small homes. It's still a very small little suburb, but their kids went to college and started moving to Deerfield, to Buffalo Grove, and moving out of Highwood.
That's very interesting. So in essence, the city and the university, maybe one day it was inevitable that this would happen anyways, but they kind of put a little quick start
push
into this?
Yeah, because neighborhoods change. People grow. This is in, this is out, this is cool, and this
Well, just your opinion, both of you. Do you think that if the university was never built there, they build it 50th South, whatever, do you think that the neighborhood that we know as Taylor Street, the area, would still to this day be an incredibly bigger Italian neighborhood still in the year 2014? Or it was inevitable that by now it would be down to, you know, its current status?
If you said right now, I think there, you know, or last 10 years, probably not, because the suburban, you know, you're talking older housing. Now that's changed.
Yeah.
You know, an 1880 house over brand new house in the suburbs, that's a big difference.
In fact, if you look at the neighborhood now, most of the people who live there are so-called yuppies, people with expendable income, who can afford to rehab these homes,
right,
build new
very
ones,
expensive areas.
The universities right there. So,
but don't you think that if these people weren't forced to leave, a big part would have stayed, a big part would have left, but I think a big part might have stayed. And such, because it was so many homes, it still would be a much bigger, I think, Italian neighborhood.
It's possible. The only thing I can think of is a comparison. Have you been to St. Louis?
No.
There's a section called The Hill.
Right.
They were going to be broken up, too, back in the late 70s. And then a priest named Father Salvatore Polizzi, still alive, still feisty, 84 years old. I talked to him 2 years ago. He stood up and said, this is not going to happen to our little Italy. So he got some of his famous friends from the neighborhood, Joe Garagiola, the baseball player. Yogi Berra. And he said, can you help me put pressure on these politicians to leave us alone? And they got them involved. They left them alone. The Hill is still a very vibrant area, and a lot of the older people are still there. Some of their kids are moving back. So it depends.
Now, why did they in the Hill want to break it up? Was it just to...
I think it was just urban expansion, right? I don't know the specifics.
Yeah.
But that was happening to a lot of little Italy.
No, they're, you know, it was even today you hear things, how come, why did they do this? And it's
okay, but in your opinion, do they do this to other ethnic groups? And I'm playing ignorant on this. I'm not trying to, you know...
I think it's happened to others.
I think it's happened to others,
sure,
yeah.
Sure.
So it's not just us.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I was just throwing that out.
I'll give you a little story.
Healthy paranoia is good for you.
Yes, yes. I have a little bit of that.
Little woman, we get to another Italian neighborhood. A lot of people don't realize that Division and Larrabee was a big Italian neighborhood.
Correct.
In fact, the book, The Gold Coast and the Slum by the University of Chicago, is very derogatory about the Italians living there at the time. Hmm. And then the Italians, when the project started coming, last feast there, I think, was 1965. They closed the church to start moving north. And one Italian woman said to me one day, she's not alive anymore. This is 20 years ago. She was 80. Well, she said, I moved from Division Larrabee to DePaul University. I said, when? 1920s. Now, she said, it was very difficult renting an apartment there. I said, what do you mean? She said, nobody would rent. We finally went to the priest at the church, and he leaned on somebody.
Why wouldn't they rent to her? You could say it. We're all adults.
Right. So they didn't want the Italian people coming.
So the Italians were
in 1920s.
Considered in that
moving mode. Into that area.
Wow.
And
that became known as Cabrini Green eventually. That area, though, produced Joe Marsala, who I mentioned earlier.
Correct.
The guy who integrated jazz. Excuse me. And Frankie Lane, the famous singer. Frankie Lovecchio.
Yeah.
He was from that neighborhood.
Who I believe went to Lane Tech High School.
The old Lane Tech, sorry.
Division, thank you for correcting me, Professor.
Division
That's
and
why
Frederick.
He's here.
Right, not the Addison and Western Lane Tech.
Correct. Yeah.
Yes, yes. That's very interesting. I don't think that today's generation would really understand that when Italians came here, we were treated so badly. I mean, those people suffered and went through a lot of heartache.
Oh, yeah. They kind of paid for us to be here and get an easier life.
Yeah.
They definitely did.
And I had a 10 years ago, a guy in World War II said to me, he said, we were going, they're getting us together. And he says, our outfit's being shipped to Europe, and we're not sure if we're going to, you know, France, Germany, or Italy. So there's a bunch of Italian boys basically from the Midwest, and they put them in a room, and they bring in above and beyond military, I don't know if you want to call it Secret Service or whatever, mm-hmm. and one of the questions he was asked is, what are you going to do if you get shipped to Italy and maybe your home village and you got to kill an
is
Italian?
Is that right?
Yeah, it's told me personally.
Wow.
And he said, I'm an American soldier. I got to do what I got to do.
That's his job, but sure. Right. Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. In fact, I know, and this is a whole other subject, which I just got to brainstorm. I would like you two to come back and do a show about it, the internment camps.
Yeah, that was
the
interesting.
The Italian,
story.
That we are going to do a show about.
A lot of people don't know about that.
Yeah.
Very few do, and that's so interesting and so important. But back to our show today. So our Italian-American history, so the university is built. Many of the Italians are forced to move out. The neighborhood is reduced, and that's where they end up.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I think they moved out to Harlem Avenue you were talking about, Professor.
Sure.
Is that where they went after that?
Sure, a lot more moving
on the edge of the
there.
City, just
sure.
before the
yeah,
suburbs.
Sure, on the edge of the city.
Right, and Harlem Avenue, that I could speak for personally, in the 80s and the 90s was vibrant. Vibrant. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was many Italians. Many Italian food stores and Italian theme stores, and unfortunately there are not as many, and things are changing. So,
well, the suburbs close to it were very Italian too. Elmwood
absolutely.
Park, Norwich now,
yes.
which is up
yes,
short west side.
Absolutely. But where do we see ourselves as a group in present day and future day? Any opinions on that?
Well,
in Chicago.
In Chicago, Chicagoland area.
I think one of the problems is, and it's one of the reasons we should mention, we're trying to get that Italian-American Studies program at Loyola because it doesn't exist anyplace. And
glad other you brought
people,
that up.
Other people don't know our history, and yep. many of our young people don't yep. know the history.
Right, our people don't know our history.
Yep.
That sends me, and I'm glad you brought it up, the fight to raise enough money to start an Italian-American studies program at Loyola University here in Chicago is a must. We
yes.
have to do this. I have good news from the Dominic Candeloro Front. The money that needs to be raised is getting closer and closer and closer to becoming a reality.
Excellent.
So he is doing a fantastic job, as is everyone behind it, and I hope that we get to that point. I really believe we will. So that is a good thing. What else? What else can we... What else can we do, and where else do we see ourselves?
Well, I'll tell you another one of my thoughts, and some people think it's crazy, and some people think it's the greatest.
You crazy? No, stop, stop.
Yeah, we need the Italian History Mobile.
The Italian History Mobile.
I like this. Is a good idea.
What is an Italian History Mobile? Professor, please tell us. Enlighten us.
If we get a little mobile, like you have the little clinic mobiles that go around, we have one that's loaded with Italian history, goes to different shopping centers at school.
As well as schools, perhaps?
Schools, libraries. October is Italian Heritage Month.
Yes, good point.
Our city of Chicago library has never did anything or much of anything on Italian history.
That
very
would
true.
Be great.
That's a good idea.
What we've talked about in 30 minutes, which we're unfortunately coming to an end, we could talk about for 30 hours. There's so much more to go over and beyond Chicago and inventions and all sorts of things that unfortunately there just isn't enough time. But
a lot of famous people too, yeah.
And while we're almost wrapping up.
We are almost wrapping up, yes.
They're starting a new series, The Manhattan. Have you heard about it? They're running a test run. It's going to do with the atomic bomb, Los Alamos. So when we think about that project, just remember Enrico Fermi.
Correct.
At the University of Chicago.
Honorary Chicagoan, right.
December 1942, split the atom, and what it said when they sent the little code to Washington, the Italian navigator has landed.
About Enrico Fermi.
Yes.
Yeah. And splitting the atom.
Wow. That's great. Bill, anything else before we conclude?
A couple years ago, I helped co-produce a movie called And They Came to Chicago, The Italian-American Legacy. Which
yes,
has a
you
lot
did,
of,
and congratulations
of,
on that.
Which has a lot of features on there that people can, you know, look at and talk about. That's kind of a step. That's what the professor's talking about. Things like the Italian Studies Program, His idea of going out to the neighborhoods, the
Italian
history movie. That's
I
a
love
great
the idea.
You've got to get the idea.
And the movie.
Are you looking for sponsorship from the Keeping It Real with Frankie D show? Is that what you're saying here?
Why not?
I have about $20 in my pocket, so I could get you about a quarter of a tank of gas. But I love the idea, and if that could ever become reality, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, the idea he's talking about getting the information out to the people, is crucial via his idea, via the Italian Studies program, getting more into the media, correcting, you know.
And getting it to the
media
children.
People, sure. Reporters,
getting
yes.
it to the children because they will never know.
Exactly.
And they
exactly.
need to know.
Exactly.
Gentlemen, thank you. It's been an informative show. From the bottom of my heart, thank you because your knowledge is priceless. I mean, that's incredible. Thank you. And as we always do on the Keeping It Real with Frankie D show, we leave you. We conclude the show with the quote of the show. Some inspirational words that I like. So today's quote comes from a great Italian-American lady, Silva Russo. And Silva says, dream more, complain less, listen more, talk less, love more, argue less, hope more, fear less, relax more, worry less, believe more, doubt less, play more, work less. Thank you, Silva. Gentlemen, thank
Brava.
You.
Brava.
Ciao.
Nice.
Thank you as always.
Thank you.
WRHS, thank you, and everyone, have a great day. Till the next time.
Next time you're found with your chin on the ground, there's a lot to be learned, so look around.
Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant.
But he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. He's got high apple pie in the sky
hopes. So anytime you're getting low, instead of letting go, just remember that ant. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
You have been listening to Keeping It Real with Frankie D from the John DeVita Broadcast Center on Jack FM 89.7, WRHS FM Norwich, and the Windy City Hometown Entertainment Network. This broadcast was directed by John DeVita. Audio engineer is James Rohde. Radio station manager is Kevin Zeflik. And the executive producer of Windy City Hometown Entertainment Network is Mr. John Shikanda. This broadcast was pre-recorded on Monday, August the 4th, the year 2014. Until next time, be safe, and thanks for listening.